Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bannering the Blue Shirts. I'm Tom Merch Jr., and I'm joined by Mike Murphy, who got his power back. Mike, how are we doing today?
I have power. A branch fell on the power lines outside my apartment, and it caught fire during the blizzard. That was pretty cool. I tweeted a video about it. I was just like, this just can't be good. And then it seemed like all the fire engines in the state of New Jersey showed up. And yeah, everything's fine. It was hilarious because we have a guest on this week, and we joked with her like, yeah, we'll have you on so long as we all have power after the blizzard. Ha 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 ha. That's, of course, that would never happen. And of course,
I feel like I jinxed you with that because I was the one that, like,
you put some bad energy into the world, Tom. I don't like the newfound powers you've discovered, but yeah, I'm fine. It gave me an excuse to read more of Sammy Joe Small's book, which is fine by me. It's outstanding for those who are looking for a good holiday read. And yeah, we had a great show last week with Alyssa Turner, and feeling good. And we have some really shitty news that's Ranger related. Then I don't know if we should just jump right into that, because it happened today.
So do we want to start off with depressing news, or we want to go...
Yeah, let's start sad and then work our way to funny.
Okay, so the depressing, sad, concerning news is regarding New York Rangers legend, and I choose to refer to him that way because it's a lot easier.
That's the right way to do it, goddammit.
Yeah, because like, that's how I was referring to him, as in the what he was and what he is.
He remains a legend of the New York Rangers. Present tense. Yeah,
yes, exactly. But yeah, the unfortunate news is that Henrik Lundqvist will not be participating in the upcoming season, which was set to be his first with the Washington Capitals, due to a heart condition. He released a statement today, and he also tweeted out a video addressing the fans, and it's a situation where he's going to be taking some time off to process this news and what the next steps are. At the start of next season, Lundqvist would be 39, so it's hard to see a situation of him coming back, but we don't want to rule anything out if we know anything about Hank. Stellar work ethic, desire to compete, to win, to fight, and it's just really shitty news because, like, we've talked about it offline about how it's really inspiring to see him, like, looking happy on social media, and whether it's him sharing stuff or the Washington Capitals sharing him in practice or all of these different things. It's like, man, we're going to get a fuck you Henrik Lundqvist season where he's like, oh, you guys thought it was done? Nope, I ain't done at all. But yeah, Now we're not going to have that.
Yeah, like the first thought I had was like that meme of not like this for, you know, Henrik not playing for another team. It is just such a draining thing to hear that, you know, he wants to be there, he wants to play, and he has a heart condition. So, you know, this is someone with, you know, who has a family. And as, like you said, don't rule anything out for Henrik in terms of maybe coming back next season, but because this is a guy who, you know, he could play with a Wolverine mauling him, and he would still be one of the greatest goaltenders of all time. But this is just so shitty, right? I hate when you have stories like this and you see when the decision is taken out of your hands. And that's what happens in something like this. And, you know, as much as we say, you know, oh, sports is business, bop, bop, bop. You know, these are people. This sucks for Henrik Lundqvist. This sucks for his family. Above all else, we're rooting for him. We hope he has all the good health in the world. And we've talked over and over again about the impact he's had on the city of New York, the community of New York Rangers fans, on us personally. I wish nothing but the best for him. I hope he recovers. And it doesn't feel good to say, Tom, but I hope he gets to play for the Capitals, because that would be a good ending to this unfortunate first chapter of his time in Washington. It feels like he deserves a better ending than this.
Oh yeah, he certainly does. And we obviously, we went through this when we we were talking about him leaving the team and the buyout and the
Yeah.
whole how it was an unfortunate situation, but it was somewhat palatable when you understood that this was giving Hank the chance that he wanted. This was giving him an opportunity to do something he wanted to do, and it was something that, yeah, it sucks. It looks weird. I know that Devils fans like look at, Berter and those few games he played with the Blues is weird. There's
Yeah.
other examples of just these legendary players who they put on a different uniform. It's more prevalent in other sports because they have a free agency system that allows them to actually get paid lots of money where there's an incentive for them to move on. But yeah, it's just really shitty news, especially with it getting closer to when we thought the season was going to start and training camp and all of that. But best wishes to Hank, obviously, and whatever is next for him. It's just sad because, like we've said, this was an opportunity for him, and now, like so many other things, something just taken away from him.
Yeah, I, again, it is what it is. Like, the human being part of this reminds you to keep shit in perspective. And it was very good to see the Rangers had a good response to this, and obviously Rangers fans everywhere are just feel like, it's taking a big bite out of a shit sandwich, right? It's like, oh, this is just not what we want to see. But yeah, again, nothing but good health for Hank and for everyone for that matter moving forward. The other thing, to make a horrible, horrible transition is we're hearing more and more that players are coming back from Europe and getting stateside. We heard, I think it was Brooksy who reported, like, to kind of start the stampede that Shesterkin came back. So, apparently, Tom, we might have the Canadian division in the States. I don't know. All I do know is that it still seems like January 13th is full steam ahead, which is just bonkers to me. But
Yeah.
that's where we are right now, is everyone is just kind of pedal to the metal. And it's really weird to think, Tom. We're now less than a month away from maybe things getting rolling, and these weird divisions, and NHL might be selling the naming rights to the divisions, apparently. So, all sorts of crazy shit going on.
Ads on
It's
helmets.
ads on helmets. I'm fine with it, by the way.
Oh
Just
yeah, I love that.
keep it off the jersey. But even then, I don't really care. The jerseys you sell to fans, keep them pure. But, like, I'm sure it's harder for a fan base, like the Rangers fan. Like, when everything the Rangers do is all about, like, tradition, prestige, class. So, like, you don't want a goddamn, like, fucking IHOP logo underneath the Rangers crest. But yeah, I get it. It's so much. I cannot believe it's still full steam ahead. And that's not even taking into consideration, like, hey, are we sure it's safe and all that shit? And like how the NHL's privately securing vaccines and all that stuff, that's great stuff. That's the healthcare system in this country working great for everyone. But more importantly, it's to me is the how this is just going to get up and running, and how evident it is that this is just really just about the ownership and the PA being like, we just need to fucking grab whatever money we can after the pinata's been smashed, because it's getting to the point where they're realizing we just can't afford to have 2 years of these devastating losses in income. So, I'm not saying that means they're throwing caution to the wind, but caution's being thrown somewhere, Tom.
Yeah, caution is being vaguely gestured from one side of the room to the other. It's,
Yeah,
you
caution's
know.
moving about, floating somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, it's, again, like we say, and it's almost like a broken record. We'll see it when we see it. And I just think I tweeted this too. Excuse me. It would be so NHL for them to talk up this whole oh, we're gonna have a Canadian, all Canadian division, and fans get excited about it, and that to go up in a ball of smoke, and then them have to play in America, and then that would be the year that a Canadian team finally wins the Stanley Cup
Oh
again.
my God, wouldn't it be great?
Oh, it would be
I
hilarious, and
would
it
love
would,
it so much.
yeah, and maybe it's
Oh, serve it to me with a stack of pancakes. I want it.
sponsored by IHOP. And like, what would the thing be then? Like, oh, I guess the pressure of not playing in Canada helped. And like, I don't say that jokingly. I think it was, yeah, it was Brian Burke was recently on Steve Dangle's podcast, and he was talking about how when he was because he was obviously GM of the Leafs. He was also, I think, president of hockey operations for Calgary, and then he was also with the Canucks. And he spoke mostly to his time with the Leafs, it being, a Leafs-centric podcast, and how as GM, and there were times like he would just encounter these players that did not want to play in Toronto, and he used examples of like he had Francois Beauchemin when he was with the Ducks, was a great defenseman for him, tried to bring him to the Leafs and he was just terrible. He goes to Montreal and he's a completely different player. So yeah, just a little tidbit there, not like trying to crap too hard on Canada, but it would just be like one of those things that, oh man, they haven't won since 1993, and then they all play in the US and then they finally win. Like, coincidence? Maybe. I don't know. Hashtag small sample size.
I just want it because it's the sort of good chaos we need in a horrible, chaotic year. It's the sort of thing that makes you just laugh because it's a little delicious irony that doesn't involve, I don't know, people dying that
Oh
I
yeah,
think is fun.
exactly.
So yeah, that'll be interesting. A little Rangers tangential thing, Tom, is apparently Anthony Duclair might be a Florida Panther.
Yeah, and it looks like it's a great deal too. I think it was what, 1 year, 1.5 million?
Yeah, and he was representing himself, which is why I think it was like a month ago I tweeted out like, "Can someone explain to me why Duclair still not signed?" And everyone kind of rushed into my mentions to say, "Well, he's representing himself, so he's shooting himself in the foot." And I was like, "I mean, you don't have to be Drew Doughty to fucking represent yourself as a player, right? Like, if you want to goddamn represent yourself, it's fine."
Yeah, although in
Why that would
Doughty's.
scare some teams away is mind-boggling to me, given what he did in Ottawa. If you can score goals for the Ottawa Senators, you're a very good player.
Yeah, exactly. And, Duclair has played pretty well, and it was surprising to see him unsigned because you would think that with there being, financial suppression with the salary cap and everything going on with COVID, that
Yeah.
he's just that per he's in that bucket where he can get something on a 1 year deal that he would be able to maybe step into a team that is more of an established situation and be that second line guy or maybe even a third line guy. But good for him. And like you mentioned, he representing himself and no risk on a 1 year deal. And whereas like Doughty, like I think the way his contract is structured, like he got the AAV he wanted, but there, I don't believe he has signing bonuses in it, which kind of doesn't prevent the Kings from eventually buying him out. But
Yeah.
he's got bigger things to worry about, I guess.
Yeah. If the Rangers didn't have the winger situation they currently had, I was all on board for a Duclair reunion. But I know I'm in the minority on that one. But I think he's a fun player. He's also one of those guys who was a UFA because Ottawa said they weren't going to qualify him. That it's like, why is a guy this young who's this productive and he's a UFA? Seemed a little sketchy. But yeah, some other Rangers related news, Tom. Revolves around. I thought your tweet was very underrated, by
It got no love. Like,
the
what the fuck? Like,
It made me laugh out loud. This is a
it was
man who
only
knows
8
all about
o'clock too.
guarantees. Yeah, this is a man who knows all about guarantees. I was like, well, that's what you call hitting the nail right on the noggin. Little Tommy with a goddamn grand slam. Yeah, that was fucking hilarious. Mark Messier is suing a cannabis company for $500,000 because they asked him to be an investor, and they said, "We guarantee you'll make your money back tenfold," or whatever the hell they said. And that company went, ass over tea kettles, goddamn disaster, tire fire.
I love that phrase.
And so now he's suing them for what his initial investment was, which seems pretty fair to me. But it is delightful to see. I mean, it sucks for Messier, obviously, to be down 500K, and then of course the legal fees. You have to wonder how much of that he's going to actually recoup here. But I think he'll be okay. But
Yeah, I hope so.
the bigger thing to me here is just, Mark Messier against the cannabis company is a headline I think we all needed in our life.
Like, seriously though, like, I get it, and I mean, I don't know, I would call myself, like, somewhat of an like intermediate investor when it comes to stocks, but like, come on, bro, like, seriously, like, if anyone ever tells you, I personally guarantee you won't lose money, like, that's a red flag right there, because anyone that knows anything about investing is there's always the opportunity to lose money, because that's just the nature of business. Like, it doesn't have to be a stock, it could just be any company. Like, you think about, like, just like this one in a million, well, not one in a million, but like this situation of COVID-19 and everything that it did to industries. Like, no one is going to predict that to happen. And you look at all these companies that might go out of business. Like, AMC is one of the largest, or the largest, movie chain in the world, and like, they are going to run out of money, and they may never reopen. Like, I ideally, like, you'd probably see them get bought out by someone and then reopen, but still. So in this case, he's buying 400,000 shares at $1.25 a share, because he got a guarantee. Mr. Guarantee wasn't going to lose money, and it's just so dumb. And I get Messier's point that he feels that in this case they were using the cachet of Mark Messier to
Trading on his name, yeah.
yeah, exactly, get people to invest in it. And the funny thing is, like, in his filing, like, he talked about himself as like one of the most famous celebrities in New York, which I kind
Yeah,
of
that's
got a
pretty fun to read.
kick out of. Like, yeah,
Yeah,
you're
reminds me of the Mark Messier Leadership Award of the
I
of I'm Mark Messier, I'm going to hand you the Mark Messier Leadership Award. Okay. You okay there, Mess? You gotta. Is there anything you want to tell us about? Like, in terms of how many, like, satellites are in orbit around that head of yours in terms of your ego? But yeah,
It reminds me of
it's fun.
the Fairly Odd Parents as I'm Doug Dimmadome, owner of the Dimmesdale Dimmadome.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the headline for this should have been Mark Messier aims high with cannabis investment. That would have been the right way to approach this. Or Mark Messier aims high, misses with big cannabis investment.
He doesn't have like luck, like, 'cause this is like another situation where like he's getting screwed out of money. Like, it was this, and then there was the thing with the Canucks, and like, I think like performance bonuses or whatever that he, I think he did eventually get, but like, come on, Mess, like, you gotta be getting better financial advice.
Come on, Mess. Come on, baby.
You're a mess.
He is a goddamn mess.
Ba-doom-tsh.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the sort of headline we need to help us digest something like the Henrik Lundqvist news, right?
Oh yeah, seriously.
It's one of those like, oh wow, you hear about like everyone you ever talk to. I'm sure every Rangers fan has a story like this. Everyone who's ever interacted with Adam Graves comes away with, this is might be the best human being I know. Adam Graves is just goes above and beyond. He's a tremendous philanthropist. He's such a good, decent human being. And you hear all these stories about players, like when they're off the ice, they kind of get humanized a little bit, and you get to better understand who they are. And a headline like this for Messier is just like it's peak 2020 for me. It's just it doesn't get much better than this. Again, I hope he gets everything that's like, I hope justice is served and he gets
Oh yeah,
what
seriously,
is due
like
to him. And I don't mean to laugh at anyone's misfortune, but this was something that is obviously comical for a litany of reasons. Yeah. Funny things,
yes.
Tom. Funny things.
Yeah, I'm trying to really think if there's anything else that like major that went on this week. It's
I mean,
just
there's all the World Junior stuff, Berard. We can make mention of that stuff, but I feel like we'll have a show. We plan on having Adam on eventually, where we can kind of touch on all of that and who the hell knows with World Juniors at this stage, because you want to talk about a goddamn tire fire. That's a whole other can of worms. That things seem to be very much pear-shaped in terms of whether or not things are being done the right way there, at least in my opinion. But yeah, it's still, I mean, we can make every show the prospect show because those are the only active hockey players we can talk about. But I figure we can save some of that stuff for when we have Adam on in the near future. Because for those who don't know, Adam just published a lot of his prospect stuff that is an annual highlight of Bucher Banner's content. So his prospect rankings, and he works down all the Rangers prospects and kind of updates us on where they are. But yeah, it's fun. It's a fun time of year because maybe, we're in the middle of December, Tom, but we're talking about how we might have hockey soon. And Adam's prospect stuff came in the middle of December because everything's going smoothly this year.
You know what also is fun?
What's that?
Our upcoming interview with Marissa, which you will hear after the break. So we will be right back with
Hey.
Marissa, and we hope you enjoy it.
And we're back from the break with our special guests, Marissa and Jemmy. Hi, Marissa, how you doing?
I am great. How are you guys?
Doing good. We're really excited to have you on the show this week. I have known you for half a decade now, I think, from working in the NWHL women's hockey space, and I put you up there in this category of I don't know how these people can work so hard with you and Erica Ayala, people who are just hustling, constantly doing everything and elevating women's sports at every opportunity they get. So, if you don't follow Marissa on Twitter, you're fucking up. She does all sorts of things, covering all sorts of sports, lacrosse. She just had a great story today on Sarah Fuller. Go up at the Times, and goodness gracious, what have you been up to during this whole we're trapped inside and we also just got a blizzard dumped on us?
Oh my God. Well, first of all, just like being in the same conversation as Erica, like is making my heart jump because she's amazing. But yeah, I've just been like freelancing a lot. So today, my story in the New York Times, I had my story in Vice yesterday. I have a couple of more things coming out in the coming days and weeks, and some hockey stuff finally about to happen soon, which like I'm very excited and really impatient to announce. So yeah, just kind of like trying to do as much as I possibly can. And yeah, big blizzard today, so not going out for a little bit, it seems like.
Yeah, not much of a change for us in the Northeast with being stuck inside, but now we're stuck inside and cold, which is just beautiful. It's perfect 2020 vibes. As you mentioned, reeling off all the things you're doing, you're someone who does a lot of stuff in terms of freelancing, and of course you were on the Boston Bruins beat before someone fucked up, as I like to put it, and decided to go a different way. But you're someone we wanted to bring on to talk not just about women's hockey, which we'll get to, but also there's an NHL season apparently happening. Players from Europe are coming back, and a very weird thing in this is that it's very likely the Bruins and the Rangers, which people have been trying to convince us this is a rivalry, those of us who are not 50 to 60 to 70 years old. because it's Boston and New York and the sports space, but this has never been a rivalry to me. But we might, these teams might be in the same division again. It's kind of weird.
I mean, yeah, it'll be cool because, like you said, like, to me, it has never felt like a rivalry. Like when the Rangers were really good, the Bruins weren't at that level, and like they don't really have much of a playoff history in recent memory. So there's really, to me, there's a disconnect there. But like you said, some of the older folks are into it. Like my dad is super excited. Like he's like, "Oh, I can't believe the Bruins and the Rangers are in the same division." And I'm like, "Okay, I guess."
That's fine.
So.
My oldest brothers are that way. They're like, "This is great." And I'm like, "Really? It's, I mean, I know the Wednesday night rivalry tries to tell us this is a rivalry, but I don't
When's
really
there a
listen to the
rivalry, we'll tell you like the Dallas Stars and Ottawa Senators are rivals. So,
It will,
they're
right?
like, yeah, these teams hate each other, and I'm like, they probably don't think about each other.
3 years ago, they had a game with three fighting majors in it. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Well, it's like how they tried to frame the Stars and the Bruins as rivals because, like, in 2007, there was like some big brawl with Steve Ott as if he wasn't like brawling with everyone.
Yeah, that was special.
And they were like, "Oh, these teams hate each other. It's always wild." And it's like, no, like this happened one time.
Yeah, it's always just forced, and it just I mean, God bless them, they're trying, but you can't really fabricate rivalries when teams play each other just a handful of times a year, which makes this really interesting because I would imagine we're going to see these teams play a ton against the other teams that are sharing a division with them. And you and I were talking before the show, and you were telling me like you're just excited to get to see, Panarin play a whole bunch. And I said, "Yeah, I'm excited to see Pastrnak because I don't have a lot of good reasons to watch Bruins games except for when the Rangers are playing them."
Yeah, for sure. So, like, I mean, I'll be following the Bruins more than other teams because I'm from here and I'm used to that. So it'll be cool to see some team like we have Buffalo, Toronto, Ottawa fatigue at this point here, I feel like. So it'll be kind of cool to see like how they just match up against the Rangers a bunch or the Islanders a bunch. And yeah, like I love watching Panarin play. He's one of my favorite players in the league to watch. I remember, I guess it must have been a year ago, 2019 or whatever, when the Bruins were at MSG and I was at the game and I was just like so hyped to like see Panarin in person play because like it doesn't happen so much. Yeah, so like it's always cool when you get to see teams you don't see so often, and for the most part, in past seasons, that's been like when the team you follow or cover or whatever is like on the West Coast and you get to see them a bunch more. But now getting to see these teams like face teams they don't play so often all the time is it's definitely going to make it like it adds that extra element of intrigue, I think.
I agree. I am at the stage where I want hockey to be safe if we bring it back. Like, I want to preface everything I say with that, but we could be playing, like, teams could play one team for 10 games, and I'd still be like, "Hey, it's hockey." But it is fun to have this kind of added element where we're going to see these teams that really tested against each other. And the Rangers are a team kind of on the rise, and the Bruins are a team. Something I wanted to ask you about. Obviously, they've been a team that just goes deep in the playoffs all the time lately, and a really strong team, but they lose Torrey Krug and in free agency, and they are linked to Oliver Ekman-Larsson forever, right? And that doesn't happen. And I'm wondering, what do you feel about the Bruins heading into this 56 game or whatever the hell it's going to be season?
Yeah, I mean, I have my questions, especially on defense, because like you lose Krug and that hurts the depth overall. I feel like Matt Grizzlick can kind of fill that spot a little bit, at least as like a power play quarterback, and he can move the puck down the ice and he's not going to be Krug. But you still have a guy who can do that at a pretty high level. So, like, okay, fine. And I like the idea of pairing him with McAvoy. I think that's a really good pairing. But then you just lose all sorts of depth because even like assuming Chara does come back. So you have him, you have Brandon Carlo, and then what? Like, I assume Connor Clifton's going to be in there. And then do you give Jacob Sporro another look or Jeremy Lauzon, who kind of came on a little bit at the end? But one of the big issues with this Bruins team in general is it's tough for some of the younger guys to get consistency sometimes because they switch things around so much. And Anders Bjork at forward has kind of been a victim of that. I feel like DeBrusk has lacked some consistency because of that. So that's going to be tough. Like, you commit to Lauzon, and how much of a leash do you give him, especially in a condensed season? And then, of course, you have like John Moore on the books, but He has...
Oh, my God, yeah. He's former Ranger John Moore. Yeah.
He's shown nothing. I mean, like, he's good on a penalty kill, and that's awesome and all, but the Bruins are a team of penalty killers. Like, that's their whole makeup. So, like, I don't see Moore as a long-term solution there. I would rather see Lauzon get a chance, but then you have to be consistent. And even then, like, whoever they put in there... and again, this is assuming Chara signs, and I think he will. I think he's waiting out to see... what's gonna, I think either like his agent or someone tweeted that already, like he's waiting to see what it's gonna look like and then he'll sign. I don't think they really had too much of a risk of losing him, but yeah, it gets pretty thin pretty quick after Carlo. And like, I like Clifton, but I mean, he's a guy you have to hide some of his tendencies because he gets very erratic too. So especially on defense, just losing that depth of having an elite defenseman in Krug and you having just like a really solid top four or five to all of a sudden, like, some question marks and not really addressing a lot of that, like, that's a concern for me.
You brought up Zdeno Chara, and I have one question. It's not so much about the rumor that's out there regarding him and the Rangers of being a potential thing, but if it were to be true, as someone who's watched the Bruins quite closely, at this stage of his career, what would he potentially offer the Rangers if they were to sign him?
I'm honestly not sure how productive he can be outside of the Bruins environment. Like, one of the reasons it works here is, like, he has the ear of the locker room. He's a captain. They really, like, they look up to him. He fills that role really well. And I think he complements the lineup they have. Like, if he is to come back, which I'm assuming he is, I like the idea of pairing him with Clifton and kind of using him in that role. But at the same time, his game has definitely declined the past few years. Like, he's lost his step. He really needs, like, an energetic type of defense pairing. So, like, McAvoy's been with him, and he's just, like, elite. But I think McAvoy can succeed a lot more if he has some more speed with him, someone who can move the puck down ice a little more, like Grizzlick. Like, I think if Chara comes back, you still have to put McAvoy with Grizzlick. And I imagine they will. So as far as, like, what he can bring to another team, I'm really not sure, because that's an adjustment to make on top of, like, I don't know if his game's going to take another step back, especially because, like, all the pauses and stuff, like, how does that affect an older player? And he's in such tremendous shape. Like, you can't say that he's not, like, a starting NHL defenseman. He should be in there for any team that has him. Like, he's a guy in the lineup. But as far as, like, a top pairing guy anymore, I struggle to say he's that guy. But, I mean, you look at a lot of analytics too, and like, when he's on the ice, good things happen for the most part. So like, he still has a role to play. I'm not sure in the same, like, eating as many minutes, like 20 minutes a game, like he has been with the Bruins as much. I don't know if he can do that anymore. I don't think they should force that anymore, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, it really depends, like, what kind of pairing or situation they would put him in if he were to go to a Rangers team. But also, again, like, I find that extremely far-fetched.
Kind of interesting to me that the Rangers and the Bruins find themselves in a position in terms of their defense that most teams almost never find themselves in, which is they're really deep down the right side and not very deep on the left side. It's supposed to be, it's hard to find guys to play the right side, especially in the top four. And that's not the situation the Rangers find themselves in, or the Bruins. And that's kind of a crazy thing to me, especially because these are two teams at very different kind of stages in terms of their ultra competitiveness. Like, the Rangers are on the rise. Maybe they're a playoff team, more likely a fringe playoff team. Who the heck knows? It kind of depends on how good Lafreniere is. But the Bruins are expected to still be very much the Bruins. I mean, Bergeron's 35 now, and obviously Chara is, you know, 73 years old. But it's interesting that these teams find themselves in these two positions. I was wondering, do you feel like this Bruins team is going to be able to kind of retool and move forward with the defense they have? I know you've already expressed some of the concerns, but the big question I have is just how much longer are we going to see the Bergeron line, which, for those who don't know, is Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak, is probably the best line in all of hockey. How much longer is it going to be a line at this level, I should ask?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that to me is dependent on Bergeron, and he has the chronic groin thing where he's still getting, like, the cortisone shots or whatever it is before every season, and, like, at some point, that's just going to crap out on him. Like, that, like, I don't imagine that happening soon, but, like, it could. I don't know. So I don't think Marchand's slowing down. I think he's only getting better somehow. And Pasternak's, what, 23, 24? Like, he's only going to keep getting better. And last year, he almost got to 50 goals, and he would have if the end of the world didn't happen. So he's going to be a guy who's going to score 50 goals multiple times in his career, like, assuming that we don't have any weirdness again. So, like, those guys are fine. To me, when I look at the Bruins forward depth, my concern, so Krejci's going into his contract year, and I feel like they've criminally underrated him and held him back a bit. So I don't know, like, what's in their plan for him. I would say, like, try your best to retain him. I'm not sure everyone agrees, because we have Bruins should trade Krejci rumors every year. You have DeBrusk on his left side, who, like, last year I thought was going to take a leap, and he didn't. And, like, I don't know if I believe he will this year. I think there needs to be some consistency there. They're going to give Andrei Kashi a try. I really liked that trade at the time. And he hasn't scored since he became a Bruin, but he also, like, he was coming back from a concussion and being sick, and then, again, the end of the world, and then in the playoffs, like, he had some chances. So, like, if they can get that line and stay consistent, that's, like, a really strong second line. And then you go to the third, Charlie Coyle in the middle is great. You have Anders Bjork there, and then Craig Smith, who they just signed to Nashville. I think, like, Craig Smith is the most Bruinsy Bruins player who was never on the Bruins before. In second place on that is Mike Hoffman, and who knows, like, they might make a move for him too.
Yeah, he's still out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's been connected to the Bruins, and I do think they need to make, like, another signing at some point. I mean, on defense, I just don't think there's a guy there that's going to help at this point. I would have liked to have seen a defensive move, but seems like no. So I'm chill with Hoffman if they can find a role for him too, especially like for backup for Kashi. Because I feel like something the Bruins have done in past years where they've made mistakes before is they go into the season assuming, like, oh, one of these young guys is going to step up, and just like not having a backup plan. It happened 2 years ago where, like, oh, we'll have a third line center be like Stanika or Frederick or Jakob Forsbacka Karlsson, who's back in Sweden, I think. And then, like, they ended up trying to put Sean Corrali there, and, like, he's better on the fourth line. And, like, it just became a mess because they didn't have the backup plans. And then they try to panic later, and they're like, oh, let's go get Nick Ritchie. That's a good idea. And give up Danton Heinen for some reason. So, like, there's a ton of questions long-term, and a lot of that starts with what's going to happen with Krejci. Is he a guy you try to trade to get some value for? Do you go for it with him? Do you try to keep him? I would try to keep him. Especially since they're going to have Kashi for a little bit here. They have Coyle locked up. I think they'd like for him to become the second line center at some point, whether that's Krejci leaving, whether that's Bergeron or whatever. Like, you can see the pieces there, but one of their problems too is their farm system is just, like, so bleak. Like, they have some guys, but they're all, like, a further far away other than Stanika, and they're trying to move him to the wing too and stuff, and not giving him consistent time at center. So, like, long way of answering, like, I don't totally know what's happening long term. I think this year they'll be fine. Maybe expectations should be a little lower because the defense kind of scares me, and I'm worried about their depth overall. But, like, in the long term, there's some questions that just, like, we don't know about right now.
So I want to have one more Bruins question I wanted to ask you, and it's a good tangent because this is another guy who's in the final year of his contract. Is I legitimately don't know from the outside looking in why Tuukka Rask seems to be a guy who gets, you know, he's the scapegoat for the Bruins whenever anything seems to go pear-shaped. It seems to be a Tuukka Rask's fault. And looking at what he's done throughout his career and looking at, you know, how hard it is to be an elite goalie for as long as he has been, it's uncomfortably similar, I should say, to some of the criticisms that Henrik Lundqvist faced before he left the Rangers as a result of a buyout. What are your thoughts on the, I don't know how to put it, like, the over-criticisms of Tuukka Rask in
Boston? People here are just weird and mean. Like, I don't know. Like,
it's a good way to sum it up, right? Yeah,
I don't know what the deal is. Everyone's mad at him all the time, and he's fine. And he also, like, holds himself accountable pretty well. And when he doesn't have a good game, he's the first to say it. I just think that he's very visible, and a lot of people just, like, don't know how hockey works. So when a goal happens, you're like, well, that's the goalie. That's his job. And then, like, it becomes a thing. also, like, having a central polarized figure to target is a lot easier than doing, like, actual analysis. So that's a part of it, too. Like, if you just, like, are lazy or don't feel like doing anything, you can be like, yeah, well, the goalie, they gave up 4 goals without, like, understanding, well, 2 of them were on penalty kills and another was a defensive breakdown and the other one, like, stuff just happens. But people can't critically think. That's, like, the only answer I can come up with, honestly.
Yeah, that seems super similar to criticisms that Lundqvist has faced. Why is it the case? Well, people are kind of shitty, and it's very easy to make the goalie the scapegoat because it's the most integral position to the outcome of the game, is what happens with the goalie. And like you said, sometimes the penalty kill sucks, or sometimes someone blows an assignment in the defensive zone, and then the puck's in the back of the net, and it's easy to say, oh, look, Tuukka messed up, but it's not always the case, yeah.
And, like, sometimes he does give up bad goals because he's a human being, but he's also one of the best goalies in the league and one of the best goalies in Bruins franchise history, like, statistically. So, like, I don't know, people need stuff to be mad about, especially when you have a good team. But there's, like, legitimate stuff to be mad about, like trading Danton Heinen, but that might be, like, too inside hockey for some people. I don't know.
A little bit, maybe. Do you think there's a next chapter after this contract for Tuukka in Boston?
I don't know, because, like, he's been hinting for a little bit leaving hockey, like, a little earlier, or just, like, after the contract, he doesn't know what's going to happen. I remember, like, a scrum 2 years ago now where everyone, like, lost their minds because he wouldn't commit to, like, after his contract. And then it resurfaced last year, like, oh, my God. And I was like, I thought we already, like, went over this. My unofficial opinion, based on nothing other than, like, everything I just said, is I think that if Tuukka continues playing hockey after this in the United States, in the NHL, it will be with the Bruins. I don't think he goes to another NHL team. I think if he's going to not retire, he'll be here. But, who, like, in the end, who's to say? I don't know.
Yeah, especially after this past offseason where all these goalies who had been in one place for forever, they all moved around like a game of musical chairs. It was bizarre. But
I just don't think he wants to, like, relocate or deal with any of that, honestly. So, like, I would imagine
don't
he stays
him.
Here. But, like, we have a whole nother season for people to just yell at him about nothing. So who knows?
Wonderful. Yeah, just what the doctor ordered. I wanted to change gears because, as our listeners know, we're also on the verge of an NWHL bubble. And Marissa is someone who has been the play-by-play of the Boston Pride, but also someone who covers a ton of women's hockey and has always made a point of covering the game and doing a great job of doing all of that. This is such a fascinating season to me because the comparison I gave to this when we had Alyssa Turner on last week, when we weren't cracking up, was this feels so much just like an IIHF Worlds or an Olympics, right? Where it's this round robin, you play everyone. All right, we're all warmed up and now we're into the games that matter. And although I still don't really know what the hell that middle group of the structure is, like the seeding stage, I think it's still up in the air. About what's going to happen after the regular season before the quote-unquote playoffs. But I was wondering, I mean, the Boston Pride were the most successful team in sports probably last year. And, you know, they lose Lexi Bender, but they add a whole bunch of good rookies because why not? Is this just the Boston Pride's to lose?
Yeah, I mean, everyone I've talked to, like, since May on that team, like, they're in total revenge mode. I can't see them not coming into the year super fired up. And I also think something that's going to be huge when you have, like, these condensed schedules is teams that have goalie tandems, I think, are going to be more successful. And they have, like, a pretty good one between Salander and Hansen. So I think that's to their benefit. I think Metro, like, is going to make some noise. And I think Minnesota is, like, they're great. And then they got Bowie, too, now. So, like, they're going to be awesome. But, like, I've been telling everyone, when you have a format like this and the NWHL has never had, like, this amount of talent into a condensed schedule like this before, it's kind of like all bets are off. Like, who knows who's going to respond to that well. But I do believe, I mean, one thing that stood out about the Pride last year is they could be in a close game at the end of the second period, like 2-1. And they would always pull away because they had so much depth. They had their legs later in the game because they could just roll out 3 lines consistently and do a great job. So I think that teams like that just have a lot of depth are like the Pride, like the Riveters, like the Whitecaps, are going to have success late in games. And I think that looks a lot like how the Pride did last year to an extent. So long way of saying, like, it's going to be wacky and there's going to be some stuff I don't think we can ever expect. But I think the good teams are going to do what the good teams do.
So last week we had Alyssa Turner on the show, and I asked her this question, and I want to ask you as well, just for some perspective. So with the format of the bubble, odds are you could maybe see that you're going to have some people who might have not tuned in before watching it. So for the Boston Pride, is there a player or two players or maybe a storyline that someone who isn't up on everything to do with the NWHL should look for, or some going in like, okay, I'm going to focus on this player, this storyline, etc.?
I think any hockey fans that are new to the Boston Pride, for example, like, they're going to love how McKenna Brand plays and they're going to just love her scoring ability. Like, if you're a Bruins fan and you're tuning into the Pride for the first time, it's like you have another David Pastrnak now. Like, you just have an amazing goal scorer you get to watch play every game, and it's so much fun. And she's my favorite hockey player to watch the past 2 years. And then, like, again, like, if you're coming in not knowing anything, like, the way Solander plays is just absolutely incredible. And I think, I just think anyone who truly appreciates hockey and appreciates goaltending would just love to watch her. Like, going back to her college days, she just always was incredible. And like, I felt so lucky that she came to Boston, because I was like, cool, I get to see her all the time now. I just think from a league perspective, I think people will love to see the pace of play. And one thing that interests me so much is like what that pace and intensity, again, looks like in an intense schedule. Does it slow down as players lose their legs, or does it amp up because the adrenaline is so much? So I think that's going to be an interesting storyline to follow in general. But for anyone who has not watched a league or has watched in a limited capacity, is looking to get into it, like, I think everyone I know who's watched the NWHL for the first time became a fan for life. So I don't think that's going to change.
Such a good point about the depth, and also the goalie tandem in Boston. People kind of sleep on how good Hansen is. She is really damn good, to the point where she might even be like the third or fourth best goalie in the league. I would put Solander and then Lev. And then after that, I think you can make a really strong case for Hansen.
Of course, especially since she's a BU girl too.
But Boston just has her, like, to have a goalie of that caliber in your pocket as your backup is just bonkers. But that's kind of what the Pride are all about, is that depth. Like you said, you know, Emily Fluke just signed in Toronto. And so you say, oh, you know, Boston lost something there. And Wolfeiler is in Connecticut, I think. And now you're like, oh, maybe Boston won't have that third line. But then you look at all the other pieces they added, like the quality of players they brought in. I think it's that trio from UNH they have. And it's like, oh, crap. They're just re-gearing. They're just moving forward. And of course, you have Teresa Vanasova, you know, a Czech national player joining the fold. It's really staggering to think that Boston, even with, you know, the turnover they had, it's very much, when I talked to Jillian Dempsey for TIG, you know, you said that they all are hungry for revenge. They all have this unfinished business mentality. So I do not want to be the team that's playing Boston in the first game of the season, because I have a feeling they're going to come out just ripping through the opposition until everyone gets a little tired. Because the other thing that's really worth mentioning here is the NWHL schedules have been like a weekend thing. It's like the NFL football season, for those who don't know. And now we're going to have a much more congested season because of the nature of the bubble. It's not a marathon. It's a sprint. It's a 2 week, just everyone's going as hard as they can and trying to get up to gear. And, you know, there's, as far as we know, there's no preseason or exhibition. And it's crazy to think that it's coming very soon, just like it's crazy to think the NHL season might be coming pretty soon. We're like a month away from both of those things happening, which is just absolutely crazy to me.
It's like wild and happening at the same time, because like we have no hockey going on right now, and now you're going to like bolt it at us. Like, okay, I guess. But to your point about like the Pride depth too, is the rookies they have, like Sammy Davis is someone who like can come in and be a leading scorer like right off the bat. She's that good. She's insane. She's the fastest player I've ever seen in person, and I saw her a lot at BU. And like she had a hip surgery and she came back like stronger than ever still. But I think like maybe because of Davis's presence, like Megara McManus is being overlooked. She can be really scary. Like she was awesome at UNH and I can really see her having a big year.
Yeah, that's the thing with Boston is all these new people. Oh yeah, they also got the first overall pick in the draft and Sammy Davis, and because they made the trade they made with Toronto. It's like, oh yeah, they're going to keep being the Boston Pride. But what's fun to me, you mentioned Metro and Minnesota. Like, the only team that has me a little nervous, or had me a little nervous, was Buffalo. Because I was like, oh, they might not have enough scoring. And then they just re-signed Brooke Stacey. And it's like, oh, well, this is awesome. Because every team looks better than they were last year. I think the only asterisk to that, I think, is Minnesota. Because they lose Nicole Schammel. And that's just a very big hole to fill. And, you know, they're a team that I always... I'm interested, especially for a format like this, because they're the oldest team in the league, and I think having young legs might help. But definitely, if you haven't put the NWHL on your radar and you call yourself a hockey fan, give it a try. It's hockey. It's very good hockey. But yeah, Tom, did you have any other questions for Marissa while we have her?
No, I think she covered a lot of ground, and you did a lot of... good talking there, Mike. You let me just sort
of sit
back.
A lot of good talking there.
Let me sit back and enjoy.
Yeah, Marissa, we want every... So, what's your Twitter? Make people follow you. I'm tired of this.
my Twitter, @Marissa_NJemmy, 1R, 1S. Don't spell it wrong. I get upset. I just tweet a lot of stuff all the time. So, if you do follow me, I'm sorry. But sometimes you get rewarded with, like, a story or something. It's worth, like, breaking news. So, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, give Marissa a follow. She does great work covering NHL, women's hockey, all sorts of things. As we mentioned, you just had a couple stories, like you said, on Vice and the Times, and your big fancy pants, and you're kicking ass and taking names, and we love to see it.
Thank you.
So, again, thanks to Marissa. Follow her on Twitter, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And just like that, we hope you enjoyed the just interview like where Mike did pretty much all of the talking, and he did a really good job. Just let me sit back and listen to the interesting things she had to say. I thought it was good, Mike. What about you?
I thought it was great, Melissa. Marissa is someone who works her tail off, really really good at what she does. She's one of those people who, to me, is like, she just digs for the story. You know, she develops sources. She does everything the right way. It boggles my mind that she doesn't have, you know, a position at a major publication, especially in a sports nutty city like Boston. Someone should get on that right away and hire her, because she's outstanding at what she does. But yeah, it was great to have her on, talk a little bit about the Bruins. It still feels so weird to me. The Bruins and the Rangers are going to be in the same goddamn division. Like, I know, like, the whole thing is, oh, Bruins and Rangers, original six. But there's no... In the last goddamn 30 years, 40 years, there's no rivalry to speak of to me. Like, it just doesn't feel like a rivalry in any way.
Yeah, they only met in the playoffs once, which was... I believe it was the... it was... 2013, the last year Tortorella was here, they were almost going to get swept, and then I believe Kreider scored to prevent the sweep, and then they lost the next game. I may be confusing a few things, but yeah, there's not much of a rivalry there, but for whatever reason, it's like either the Bruins or the Flyers that the NHL would say, okay, let's have these two teams play on Black Friday, because if, you know, there's anything we know, that they're amazing rivals. But yeah.
Yeah. But it is really interesting to think the Bruins are a team that's fascinating to me, because not only because of what they've achieved, but also because the Rangers should look very closely at teams like Boston and teams like Tampa and teams like Toronto, for that matter. I think even look even closer to a team like Toronto to kind of understand and learn from some of the missteps that have been made by those organizations. Like, you know, Marissa brought up John Moore, former Ranger John Moore, who, when he signed that deal in Boston, everyone was like, "What the fuck is what the why?" And this is why you don't give guys term, like, especially if you're not sure, because how long is Boston going to be saddled with John Moore, a guy who they don't even want to have in the goddamn lineup? It's really interesting to look at teams like that, and you look at it like Boston is a team, like, they have David Pastrnak, they have Patrice Bergeron, up until recently they had Torrey Krug, you know, they have Charlie McAvoy, they have all these great, Brad Marchand, all these great pieces. And the Rangers are going to be a team that has pieces like that are young and developing that could become players of that caliber. You should really look at teams like this closely and understand. I mean, what better lesson do we need than the Henrik Lundqvist era to understand you have a window to succeed and to reach your ultimate goal, and you really need to goddamn deliver. And that means you have to be incredibly mindful with what you do with your assets and how you invest. And you have to be very careful about the pieces you bring in and where the money goes. And we already know the Rangers have so much cap space tied up in Panarin and Trouba, and there's going to be even so much more in Zibanejad. And can you even imagine what Lafreniere is going to have to make in Kaapo Kakko? And all those are important things to keep in mind. That's why you should look at these teams and understand where the money goes and where it should go. And I think, like, Shayna and others have done good work with looking at percentage of the cap and how much should really be reserved for goalies, how much should be reserved for forwards and defenders. And those are lessons that I think are going to become really, really relevant to the Rangers right away. So it's fun to look at a team like Boston. It's also weird, I mentioned this to Marissa, but it's weird that Boston has the same issue as the Rangers, where, like, the left side of the defense is the side that's weak. It's kind of goofy.
Yeah, I mean, they got Jack Johnson.
Yeah, they do got Jack Johnson, and probably gonna move D'Angelo over to the left side. That'll be a thing. Could have just done that earlier, but yeah.
There's so many things.
There's yeah, that is it's a good summary of events, Tom. There are so many things.
All
Yeah, that's
the
where we are.
small things.
All the small things. Was there anything else to cover? I mean, Marissa was great. We ran through a bunch of stuff. I'm excited for the NWHL. I'm excited for hockey. I hope everything's done right and it's done safe. Yeah. We
I
should have
hope
asked her about
so.
Ryan Lindgren. I think
Oh,
that was a
yeah, that would have
yeah.
been. Well, there's always next time.
Always next time. We'll have to remember next time for when we have Marissa on. But yeah, that was I just wrote the report card on Ryan Lindgren for Banter, and I found myself, it was very hard to criticize Ryan Lindgren. Like, if you go into it understanding, like, yeah, I know what he is. He's not going to be Adam Fox in the neutral zone or offensive zone, or with a puck on a stick in the defensive zone for that matter. What is he supposed to do? He's supposed to be, quote unquote, shut down defense first defenseman. I thought he did very, very well. It's still, he's a guy who's interesting to me because he could just as easily be a part of the fringe core of the team moving forward, as he could be deemed a spare part and moved along in a trade at some point. Because, I mean, he proved he's an NHL caliber defenseman. And, I mean, he looked really, really good playing with Adam Fox, but I think a lot of guys would have looked great playing with Adam Fox. And that also made it hard to kind of evaluate his season. But Ryan Lindgren is a guy who I think we don't talk about enough. I don't think Rangers fans talk about enough. For as much as of a shit show as the defense was last year, it could have been so much worse if Ryan Lindgren didn't play the way he did, I think.
Yeah, that's true, and it's why I'm interested to see this upcoming season. If they are playing together again, great. If not, then how does Lindgren react? But he's certainly come a long way, I feel, in terms
Yeah.
of perception from when he was first acquired. But we shall see.
I'm gonna look closely at his usage on the PK because with Staal out of the picture, I would imagine he's just gonna eat more of those shorthanded. Obviously, you're gonna have Trouba out there for a whole shitload of time, but without Staal there, I know that the whole thing is, oh, Jacques Martin liked Jack Johnson, the Rangers liked the idea of Jack Johnson on the penalty kill, which, if it's not enough to make you cry, it should be. But like, if there's a lot of potential for Lindgren to see more ice time next season, and to just be the guy who kind of puts defense first and lets Adam Fox do his goddamn thing at even strength, which is what we all want to see. So yeah, he's a really interesting player to keep a close eye on. At least in my books, he's someone who I didn't give enough credit for how good of a skater he is. I didn't give enough credit for the decisions he makes. There are a lot of underlying things and numbers that are worth keeping a close eye on. Like, he gets hit a lot, and I think a lot of that has to do with his maybe indecisiveness with the puck, and how he's just very meat and potatoes. But you can have a really good NHL career as a meat and potatoes defense first defender. It's just a question of the team recognizing how much to invest in a player like that, and also where he fits in the lineup. And right now, with the dearth of options the Rangers have for that left side, as exemplified by bringing in Jack Johnson, it's not a bad thing to have a Ryan Lindgren in the picture, which I was pretty low on him when the Rangers acquired him, but I've changed my tune, Tom. Change a tune.
That's good. I mean, as time goes on, you can reevaluate, which is normal. And I would say that I hope he can continue to do what he's doing, and we'll see.
We'll see. You know who else I would like to have is Ryan Graves. Remember Ryan Graves?
Oh, yeah. I don't even want to get into the fact that what was it? Ryan Graves and Neil Pionk were higher on the odds for winning the Norris Trophy out of Vegas than Trouba, but we're not ending the show on negativity. We're gonna
Why
end
would you bring that up, Tom?
we're
It
gonna end the
hurts.
show on positivity. In
It hurts.
the best way I know that we can bring up positivity is talking about our great patron supporters: a 6 foot gap, Adam Nohoek, Aiden Gaspar, Armiel Kistner, Andrei Shchikov, Andy White, Anthony Viola, Beezer, Ben Pierney, Bjarne Osterheim, Bob Cowa, Bobby Callahan, Captain America, Chris Abebe, Chris Lucas, Chris Marco Trigiano, Clark Carroll, Daniel Jazen, Frank Menino, George Lippmann, Igor Zavlosky, Jimmy Bussholt, Jason Silberman, Jeff Owen, Jermaine Francis, John Predzepelski, John Repe, Jordan Sisson, Justin Walsh, Keith Ranchillo, Kevin Meade, Kush Tastic, Kyle Napolitano, Matt Bader, Matt Pumple, Matthias Olsen, Michael Canick, Michael Marcus, Michael Silvers, Nikolai Hoffman, Panarin 2020, Patrick Landholt, Perennial Powerhouse, Sammy Vogel-Seidenberg, Sean, Stig Bjelbeck, Stink Flamen, Tall Guy Rob, The Tin Man, Tori from Manhattan, and Trevor Kempner. Thank you, everyone, for your continued support. We
Each and every
greatly
one of you
appreciate it.
is our special little snowflake in this holiday season.
It means a lot. Obviously, we know times are tough. Those who've had, like we say every week, those who've had to drop off, totally understand. Those who have to readjust their contributions, we get it. It's tough out there. We appreciate all of our listeners, and we appreciate our Patreon supporters a little more. We're going to play it by ear if we have a show next week. Obviously, next
Yeah.
week is
It's Kringle time.
Christmas. To those who have been
Santa's
celebrating a
coming.
Hanukkah, hope you've had good time with your family, friends, however it is you've been spending it. But if we don't have a show next week, Merry Christmas to everyone. We hope you enjoy it, however you decide to. If you're not celebrating Christmas, that's cool too. Whatever you're doing, hope you
Be
enjoy the
safe.
time.
That's my
Yes.
Christmas wish for everyone. Be safe. Stay
Be
healthy.
safe, stay healthy. I appreciate you,
And
Mike, as always.
take a candy cane and suck on it long enough to turn it into a lethal weapon. That's what I like to do.
I got a little dark there.
I'm just saying, if you find yourself in prison, ask for a candy cane, suck it to a point, and do what you gotta do. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, on that note, Merry Christmas. Talk to you again soon.
Sleigh
Bye-bye.
bells ring. Oh, you're listening.